Well, I've always been really interested in science, I think really as long as I can remember. I remember my granddad buying a microscope for me and looking at onion skins and little insects under the microscope, so I've been always fascinated by that. During school I did sciences, I chose sciences as a subject, had a really inspirational biology teacher who actually suggested going into dietetics, because I also have always had an interest in food and cooking. So I still do that to this day. So really the tying up of food and science in the way that food can help us to become healthy and keep healthy was something that I was really interested in. So I studied human nutrition dietetics for a degree at University of Surrey. I went into dietetics, which is actually the application of nutrition in a clinical setting. So for those who have diseases and conditions. And I really did enjoy working in a hospital, but I really felt as though nutrition has key powers, really, in being able to prevent people gaining diseases or getting diseases. So that's why I chose to be a nutritional scientist, not work in a clinical setting, and try and determine how we can influence people's diets to prevent disease and maintain health. Simple sugars are those that are small number of units. So we have single monosaccharides, and examples of these are glucose and fructose. These can be chemically bound together to make disaccharide, and an example of disaccharide is sucrose, but we use table sugar. And of course, when they're consumed, they're digested by digestive enzymes, in the mouth, amylase, for example, into the simple sugars, glucose and fructose, which we then absorb and utilize in our body. So they're simple sugars. Complex carbohydrates are those that are much longer, so polysaccharides, poly meaning a lot of different sugar units all bound together. And these are found in a lot of carbohydrate-rich foods, and starch is an example of a polysaccharide. But complex carbohydrates in the scientific terms probably are those carbohydrates that also have other components such as perhaps fibres in there, such as the whole grains as well. So often we refer to whole grains as more complex carbohydrates. So going back to whether sugar is bad for our health, I think I'll start off by saying sugar consumption is not essential. So it's not essential to consume the macronutrient sugar. We can produce sugar in our body, as I say, from breaking down starches, but also it can be made. So we don't need to consume sugar, although carbohydrate is an important component in our diet. If you have excess sugar in your diet, then I think it has got some detrimental consequences in itself. So very high levels of sugar can impact on the way our liver metabolizes, and it can actually produce fat within our liver. So very high fructose particularly can produce what we call fatty livers. But that's very high consumption, and probably only a very small proportion of the UK population have that high level that can cause those sort of metabolic effects, although they are real. I think the important thing about sugar is that it does impact on passive overconsumption. Because it's nice, we like to eat it, we overconsume it. And so that can lead to obviously consequences of that, which can be overweight and obesity, and you get the consequences of that to our health. So it is linked to bad health, and because it's not an essential nutrient, I think, you know, to reduce it is certainly beneficial to our health. The other disease which has been mentioned here is dental caries, and I think dental caries is one of the only diseases that actually can be cured by diet completely. So if you didn't have sugar, you wouldn't get dental caries, and I think that's a really important consideration. Children particularly, but also as adults. So, you know, sugar, if you eliminated that, then we wouldn't have a problem with dental caries, which I think is a massive public health problem. And in fact, I think having teeth extracted is the main reason for children being admitted to hospital nowadays, which is a shocking statistic, I thought. There is probably an innate liking within us for sugar. There has been speculation why this may be. It may be that sugar is obviously energy-giving food, and perhaps when we were in a time of less food, it would obviously mean if you had a sugar rich food, then that would give us energy quite quickly. If you look at the energy density of sugar, it's a carbohydrate and has the same energy density as proteins, about 4 kilocalories per gram, whereas fat has an energy density of actually 9 kilocalories per gram. So actually fat is more energy dense than sugar. But it is a food that does give us energy. And as was said, breast milk itself is actually sweeter than cow's milk. It has more lactose in it, which is the milk sugar. And so I think we do have a liking for sugar generally as a species. And this is taken through life. And as was said, I think perhaps it's reinforced because we give sugary foods as rewards, and we give them, you have them in times of perhaps pleasure, as presents, and also after a meal. I remember when I was young, you know, if you eat up your main course, then you can have a pudding, and it's as a reward for that. So I think there's probably a scientific reason, but also a cultural and social reason why we continue liking sugars. So we need a certain amount of glucose in our circulation. This is important. If we have very high levels of glucose, then this can, particularly in those that have diabetes, that have unable to control their high glucose load, their high glycemia, then this can lead over a long period of time to damage of the blood vessels, particularly the small vessels, and can lead to damage of the retina, the eyes, can lead to damage of other areas, the kidneys. So if you have high uncontrolled blood glucose levels, then it can have detrimental effects on our health to the microcirculation. Therefore, it is more beneficial to have perhaps a more steady state glucose intake, so you don't get these big spikes. Now, to clear the glucose in our blood, we release a hormone called insulin that's produced in the beta cells in the pancreas near the liver, and this is stimulated in relation to glucose. So if you have very high spikes, you need to have high insulin release. And over a period of time, what happens is that you might get exhausted beta cells, and therefore you might then develop diabetes because you can't release enough insulin to clear or to utilize the glucose, clear the glucose from the circulation into cells. So for our health, and also if you get a very big peak of glucose, as you know, after you've had a meal, you get this postprandial malaise, really, because you've got very high levels of these nutrients, particularly glucose, and it can cause lethargy as well. So the glycemic index is a way that we can look at properties of carbohydrate-rich foods. The glycemic index is the ability of any food to increase our glucose in our blood over a certain time period. And what we do is we compare one type of food, so if we're, for example, looking at rice, white rice, against a standard food. And the standard food is generally either sugar or white bread. And we compare one to the other and multiply by 100, so it's a percentage. So we feed these foods to people, and actually to get a glycemic index, you for the World Health Organization say you only actually have to feed it to 10 individuals to get a glycemic index of a food. And you measure, usually by finger prick samples, the blood glucose over a period of time. And you measure the area under the glucose curve, so in other words, the amount of glucose that's in your circulation over that period. And what we relate is those that have a lower glucose response have a lower glycemic index, perhaps below about 40%, are beneficial to our health, compared with those that have a high glycemic index, about over 70%, which again release sugar very quickly into the circulation. This measure is quite variable because it's not like an absolute measure, like we might measure the amount of starch in a food, and we have rigorous methods that accurately measure the starch in a food, and if I measured it here in Reading and it was measured in London laboratory, they would probably be very similar. With the glycemic index, it's called a functional measure. So in other words, it depends on the people that consume that food. And if we all had the same amount of white bread and I measured our blood sugar, we would all have completely different responses. So it's not an absolute value and it can vary quite a lot. And that's why I think it isn't always a standard measure for different foods. And if you look on the internet, you'll get different GIs, glycemic indexes for different foods. But it's a way of trying to look at the quality of the carbohydrate. It can also change depending on how you consume the food. So if you consume, for example, a baked potato, it might have a certain glycemic index. If you consume an identical quantity of baked potato, but have it with a knob of butter, then the glycemic index will change. It will be lower. You've actually had the same amount of carbohydrate and the same amount of food, but because of the butter will actually slow down, perhaps the digestion absorption of the glucose, you won't get such a high spike of glucose in your blood. So it does depend on how you eat it, what foods you eat it with. And you were saying there, Robert, about different processing of foods, and you're right. For example, potatoes, if you have boiled potatoes, they have quite a high glycemic index. If you cool them down and use them as a potato salad, because of the crystallization of the starch molecules within the potatoes, they will actually have a lower glycemic index because it's absorbed and digested differently. And therefore, exactly the same quantity and type of food, just eaten in a different way, will give you a different GI. So free sugar, this is the definition that the UK has now for sugar in food, and that's the sugar that's not bound within a food structure. So for example, you may have sugars like fructose in an apple. That won't be counted as a free sugar because it's contained within the matrix of the food. So free sugars are any sugars that are within foods that aren't within the matrix. So any added sugar that you might add to foods like in biscuits, sucrose, or any other sugars, for example, in a fruit juice, when the sugars have been released from the cells of the fruits, they would also be classed as free sugars.